There is no place on earth like the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The Congolese War is estimated to have taken over 3 million lives since 1996. No conflict since World War II has produced as many casualties. Ripples from the genocide in Rwanda hit the Congo like a tidal wave. Rwandan officials and militia responsible for the genocide crossed into Congo in 1994. Their hostile presence led the post-genocide Rwandan government to invade Congo in 1996, igniting the first war, which overthrew the corrupt, despotic regime of Mobutu Sese Seko. A year of uneasy peace collapsed into full-scale war again in 1998. A number of neighboring countries piled into the fray, both for and against the government in Kinshasa, sparking what was known as Africa's first world war. Peace efforts have led to the creation of a transitional government composed of many of the warring factions. But violence in the war-devastated eastern part of the country continues apace, much of it beneath the radar screen of the international community. Congo's vast mineral wealth creates opportunities for plunder by greedy commercial actors, criminal networks, and powerful neighbors. The impact on a vulnerable population is all too reminiscent of the lives lost during Belgian King Leopold's deadly colonial project more than a century ago. For centuries, Congo has been sliced and diced by its neighbors, by international commercial interests, and by its former colonial power. Outsiders and their local accomplices have sown confusion to destroy local administration, cohesion, and defenses. They have also aimed to displace people in order to reduce barriers to the extraction of minerals and creation of spheres of authority. Belgian colonialists were replaced by Mobutuists, who were then replaced by Ugandans, Rwandans, Zimbabweans, and elements from Kinshasa as the organizers of this feeding frenzy on Congolese resources. Mortality rates are high in eastern Congo because civilians are constantly being displaced by the unprecedented levels of violence. The country has one of the highest rates of displacement ever recorded. There are now nearly 3.5 million displaced people as a result of war and associated violence. The continuous rounds of displacement have resulted in a slow, steady impoverishment and an erosion of the capacity to survive. Consequently, over 3/4 of Congo's population is malnourished. The combination of constant displacement, eroding nutrition, and no access to health care leads to a downward spiral in well-being that far too often ends in death, especially for children. Congo is rich and fertile and would not need outside assistance if the cycles of violence could be ended. People live on a razor's edge, as the disruption of planting cycles and marketing channels makes access to food tenuous. In many places in the East, families are lucky to eat one meal per day. Childhood is an abstract concept in many parts of Congo. Children are born into war, they are deeply affected by it, and they are often participants in it. There are thousands of child soldiers in various armed groups in Congo today. Most were either forcibly recruited or joined because they and their families saw no alternative economic future. Nearly all of these children have experienced untold horrors, trauma that further complicates their return to civilian life. Programs are just now being constructed that attempt to disarm, demobilize, rehabilitate, and reintegrate these former child soldiers. However, resources are constrained. Alternative economic opportunities are scarce. Pressures to join or rejoin militias are often great. Counseling services are erratic. Local communities are often wary and sometimes hostile. And government or external agencies often can't deliver what they have promised. Escaping the cycles of violence in this context is a difficult proposition. If there had been no genocide in Rwanda, there would have been no subsequent war in the Congo. As the armed elements who perpetrated the genocide poured over the border into Congo in 1994, hotly pursued by the Rwandan forces that stopped the genocide, they brought their unfinished war with them. Vastly complicating efforts to feed the civilians amidst the 1 million or so refugees were genocidaire, All international standards related to separation of civilian and military populations were broken in the effort to save the lives of refugee populations dying of malnutrition and cholera in the Congolese camps. The Rwandan militias began to reorganize in the refugee camps, and for the next 2 years launched attacks into Rwanda. Rwanda warned the world that if something was not done about this, it would take matters into its own hands. When nothing, in fact, was done, Rwanda invaded the Congo in 1996, attacking the refugee camps and driving insurgents and civilians alike deep into the Congolese jungle. Unknown thousands of Rwandan refugees perished in the years that followed as a result of massacres, malnutrition, or disease. Until very recently, no meaningful effort was undertaken to deal with the underlying problem of the Rwandan militias. Only beginning in 2004 did the UN finally attempt to create opportunities and programs to demobilize and repatriate Rwandan militia who were willing to go home. But the numbers are still large enough that the stability of the region remains at risk. The militias throughout the east provide the biggest threat to peace in the Congo. In both the Ituri and the Kivus, internal dynamics and external support ensure that pacification of the east will not be a quick or easy task. Armed groups have terrorized eastern Congo since the mid-1990s. Some of these are the combatants in the civil war, including the government army and groups known as the RCD and the MLC. There are, however, many other armed elements principally organized in the form of militias. These militias range from armed factions in the northeast, the Ituri province, to local defense forces and foreign militias in the east, the Kivus. In both places, armed elements prey on civilian populations, looting assets, raping women, and undermining any authority that exists. The terms of the Congolese peace agreements are clear regarding the main civil war combatants, but opaque regarding the militias. Hopes that they will melt away in the face of a new unified army and transitional government appear to be wishful thinking. If cantonment and disarmament and demobilization and reintegration are not pursued rapidly, the war will resume with greater ferocity than ever before. The United Nations Organization Mission in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, MONUC, originated in response to the initial peace agreement signed by the parties in the warring states in 1999. The signatories thrust upon the UN a burden that it was not ready to accept, that is, full responsibility for implementing and enforcing the agreement. The signatories wanted MONUC to monitor the disengagement of forces and disarm the Rwandan militias, forcibly if necessary. With no strategic interest and great skepticism, the United Nations Security Council gave MONUC a weak mandate, inadequate resources, and little diplomatic follow-up. It took 3 years for member states to contribute enough troops to bring MONUC up to its authorized capacity. It was only in 2003, with the appointment of a strong UN Special Representative, former U.S. Ambassador William Swing, the active diplomatic efforts of South Africa, and the support of the European Union in a military deployment to Ituri province, that MONUC finally became relevant to the efforts to consolidate peace in Congo. Civilians have been preyed upon in unprecedented ways. Attacks, rapes, mutilations, cannibalism, and the use of internally displaced persons and refugees as meal tickets and human shields for militias with genocidal ideologies. There are very few set battles. Rather, there is usually systematic looting, pillaging, and predation. Rape has increased. The cycles of brutality deepen. It is not a coincidence that with no viable economic opportunities, no functional government, no accountability for war crimes, and no check on external arms supplies, that armed groups continue to prey on communities with unparalleled cruelty. Ending impunity is a critical component of ending the war in the East. Prosecutions through the International Criminal Court could be an effective means by which to create some measure of accountability. Because of the extraordinary level of crimes against humanity, perpetrated in the Congo, the ICC initiated its first ever preliminary investigation in 2003 by collecting evidence of war crimes in Ituri province. On June 24, 2004, ICC prosecutor Luis Morena Ocampa announced the commencement of a full criminal investigation into crimes committed throughout Congo since July 2002, when the court's jurisdiction began. Political pressure from the transitional government and the international community, who feared judicial proceedings could undercut and jeopardize the political process, slowed efforts by the ICC to build dossiers on the perpetrators and could provide further impediments to building cases. Impunity is alive and well in Congo. It has become a cliché over the past half century that women bear the brunt of war. That would be an understatement in Congo. Rape has become a routine tactic of war, an instrument of violence in Congo. Gross atrocities are routinely committed in the context of mass rape. Lately, there are reports of atrocities and deliberate acts of mutilation committed in the context of mass rape. Brutal rape, kidnapping of women, and forced concubinage have become war behaviors. The brutality of rape appears to be unprecedented globally, and certainly without historical precedent in Congo. The ages of rape victims range from 4 to 80. Rape victims are disowned by their families, and there are terrible psychological effects from these attacks. Despite the end of the war, rape is still widely practiced, as there remains total impunity for these crimes. Some efforts have been made to provide trauma counseling, but so far it is a drop in the bucket relative to need. By the beginning of 2004, and in response to concerted international diplomacy and pressure, a peace agreement between Congolese and regional belligerents was finally being implemented, albeit slowly. A national unity government had been formed, and it was attempting to extend its administration into the previously ungoverned and war-ravaged East. In many places, local deals were being forged, and local communities were taking the lead in reconstruction and reconciliation efforts. The UN Security Council had finally provided for a more robust mandate for what was previously an ineffectual observer mission, even though, for a country as big as continental Europe, there was still only one quarter the number of peacekeepers that tiny Kosovo has. The neighbors were put on notice that further intrusive meddling would have political and economic costs. While serious implementation challenges remained, a major corner appeared to have been turned barely.